Isn't it about time we faced the problem?
What problem?
Your gambling.
Oh, that. You mean a little flyer here and there on the track?
I mean a day-to-day little flyer. Which daily double did you blow today?
Liz, I had this one wired. Shamrock waltzed home in the third at 7-1, and Eelgrass was a shoo-in in the sixth. I should have cleared nearly $3,000.
But you didn't.
Could I know the jockey would have a heart attack?
No.
So, there's your answer.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to an eargasmic edition of the U.S. Racing Sports Gambling Show. I am your friendly host, Derek Simon, and this is the show where we talk about everything and anything related to the world of gambling, and quite the show on tap today. Craig Spencer is going to be joining me. Craig Spencer is a former writer, and he now does some database handicapping and has done very, very well in the multi-race sequences. So we'll talk to Craig about how he goes about that. Also, Kevin Rogers from Vegas Insider is back, and we're going to talk a little basketball, and also how to handle losing streaks. Of course, losing streaks in horse racing are a very common occurrence, just because typically you're just not winning that often. But it happens in sports betting too, and of course the ways of dealing with this, I think, are very, very similar. But before we get to that, there are a few things that you need to know.
I'm looking forward to completing your training. In time, you will call me Master.
All righty then. I learn it from a book.
I find this scientifically fascinating.
You're gonna remember this the rest of your life.
Oh, I already knew that.
I don't get it.
What part didn't you understand?
Will you never learn?
Tell you I can. Yes.
Well, there were some great horse races run at Gulfstream Park last weekend. Some good races being run this weekend as well at Gulfstream Park, also at Aqueduct, the Gotham Stakes, and then the last one being at Santa Anita, the San Jezebel. I don't know how it's pronounced, but anyway, that race will feature Songbird. But last weekend, there was the Devona Dale, and this kind of relates to Songbird because a horse by the name of Catherine Sophia was entered in that race, and it went a little something like this. I feel like Tone Loke.
Three quarters in 1:11.4. They're into the stretch. Catherine Sophia runs for the lead on the outside and takes off. Catherine Sophia is pouring it on now. She has opened up suddenly to a 5-length lead over Dearest and Lewis Bay. Oh, this is one fantastic filly. Catherine Sophia wins the Devona Dale by about 7 lengths in the end over Lewis Bay, Dearest, and then came Our Girl's a Charmer.
Catherine Sophia in the Devona Dale won very, very easily, and the thing that I'm really liking about Catherine Sophia is that she is showing this new dimension, this ability to rate, and I think that is fantastic. I think that's going to serve her very well. Now, it was interesting, because while I've heard that the Thoroughgraph numbers for Catherine Sophia have been very, very strong, the Equibase number in this race, not that great, just a 98. And in fact, we're going to be talking about the Fountain of Youth, but I'll contrast those races right now. The Fountain of Youth, a 115. What's odd about that is the Fountain of Youth wasn't that much faster. So I'm not really sure why there's such a huge disparity here. In terms of pace figures, a -6 early speed ration, that's my own measurement of early energy disbursement, and the lower the figure, the better. -6 is pretty good for a pace. Not particularly fast, but not really slow either, so just kind of an average pace. -3 late speed ration, that's my measurement of late energy disbursement, and there you're looking at the higher numbers. -3 for a dirt race is fantastic, so a very, very good race in that regard from Catherine Sophia so far as the pace figures are concerned. I mentioned the Fountain of Youth. Of course, Mohey Man is the Kentucky Derby favorite. We're going to talk a little bit about the Kentucky Derby odds here in just a second. But he looked impressive in the Fountain of Youth.
And we go a little something like this.
hit it.
Zulu has taken over on the far turn from Awesome Banner, and Mo Heyman is right alongside of them, and the three of them head around the far turn, four lengths clear of Awesome Speed, who's been passed now by Fellowship, and Fellowship's about to go past stablemate Awesome Banner on the far turn. In the meanwhile, Zulu and Mo Heyman have run three quarters in 111 flat, and they're coming to the top of the stretch of the Fountain of Youth. Fellowship is trying to come and get them from third, and they're into the stretch, and it's Mo Heyman who has taken the lead on the outside. Mo Heyman to the front, pulling away from Zulu. Fellowship is third as Mo Heyman pulls away. And Mo Heyman remains unbeaten, winning the Fountain of Youth over Zulu. And then it was Fellowship, followed by Awesome Speed.
I mentioned that Mo Heyman got a 115 Equibase speed figure. To put that in perspective, that is the second fastest since Equibase began recording figures back in, if I can get a number here, 1992. In fact, it ties Dance Floor as the second highest Equibase figure behind Quality Road in 2009. And although many have questioned Quality Road's ability to go a distance, I think there's no denying that he was a tremendous talent. So that 119, I mean, that's heady company to be second to Quality Road. From a pace figure standpoint, minus six ESR, so the same as the Devona Dale, minus seven LSR. Now, that is still very, very good. It just pales in comparison to Devona Dale, or excuse me, to Catherine Sophia in the Devona Dale. Now, I talked a little bit about the Kentucky Derby odds. Mo Heyman is clearly the favorite now to win at U.S. Racing, and these are fixed odds. And, you know, we should talk a minute here about value. I say all the time that if you're going to take advantage of things, well, maybe I don't say this all the time. Maybe I need to say it more often. You need to act quickly on these things. The advantage of fixed odds is that you know what your price is going to be. You know, if I see, and I've seen this before, disparities, let's say in the pools in a pari mutuel system, and, you know, maybe a horse is paying more to place than it would to win. He's like, oh, okay, there's great value there. Yeah, there is. But chances are, by the time you place your bet and all the money comes in, that advantage is going to go away. On a show, I think a couple years ago, I talked to a guy about exactly that. And he was a university professor, and he tried doing precisely what was taught by Dr. Z and some others, taking advantage of discrepancies in the pool. And he noted that it is incredibly hard to do because almost always what you think is an advantage goes away. That's not true with fixed odds. Remember, I was talking about Gunrunner and Mo Tom. And at the time, this was before the Risen Star, but even shortly after the Risen Star, Gunrunner was 40 to 1. Mo Tom was 75 to 1. They're both 12 to 1 now. I don't even think that's value at this point. But 40 to 1 and 75 to 1, and then it gives you the options to hedge. So check out the prices. And like I said, when you see those kinds of situations, got to move quickly on it. And lastly, from USA Today, first mare reported in foal to American Pharoah. Apparently untouched talent, a 12-year-old Stormcat mare, is carrying the foal of American Pharoah. But there's some controversy. That's why I said apparently. There was some confusion as to whether or not she is carrying American Pharoah's foal or another horse's foal. So they actually had to bring in an expert to determine who, in fact, the foal belonged to. And I got some audio from the barn when that decision was announced.
You are the father!
So that's very heartwarming. American Pharoah will soon be represented on the racetrack.
Looking for some action? Well, if it's sports and casino action you're after, USRacing.com has got you covered. At USRacing.com, you can get the latest betting lines on pro and college football, basketball, and all the MLB and NHL action, too. Heck, you can even get the latest odds in the presidential race, the Academy Awards, or who's going to be the next James Bond. So if you're looking for some sports and casino action, look no further than USRacing.com, the place that's setting the pace.
Now, back to your host. While he's still sober, here's Derek.
I'm now joined by Craig Spencer. Craig is a longtime Facebook friend, former writer, and an all-around great guy. How you doing, Craig?
How about you, Derek?
I am very good. Now, the reason I wanted you on the show is for all the things that you've done in racing, and you've been a rider, and I know your dad trains racehorse. I don't know if you take part in that as well, but you're a great handicapper. And I've seen you kind of develop over the years, and, you know, like me, you do the database stuff, and I've just seen the progression, and especially with the multiple, the horizontal wagers, pick three, pick four, pick five, all those kinds of things. Tell me a little bit about your background, about the riding, how you got into racing, and then we'll move on into the handicapping.
Yeah, I grew up, my dad was a jockey in Southern Utah Busch Tracks, and I grew up kind of the only son, kind of expected that I'd be a jockey, and so I started riding races in Southern Utah when I was 16, went back to the East Coast and rode for a couple of years, and then I grew from 4'11" when I graduated high school to 5'6", which kind of made the riding days a little bit shorter, a little harder to keep the weight down. And so I went back home, started school, kept riding around the Intermountain area for a few years, ended up riding races for about 12 years in total. And when I started graduate school, I had to give it up because my diet, I couldn't keep the diet down and keep my my senses about me. Kind of have my cognitive capabilities went down a bit when I was stuck in the weight so hard. And now I'm in corporate America. I still own a horse or two. My dad trains, and at 75, actually still exercises his stable of horses each morning. And I get into the spreadsheet that I'm in handicapping. Excited about this.
How did you get into the handicapping side? First of all, I want to commend you on the riding. I've talked to other riders on the show, and I always say you guys have something that I don't, and that's a whole lot of courage when it comes to doing something like that, because it's one thing just to ride a horse, but at the speeds that you're riding, the quick decisions that you have to make, all of that kind of stuff. And I've always appreciated your feedback on social media when we've talked about some of these jockey issues. But tell me about the handicapping, and specifically how you got into spreadsheet handicapping or database handicapping. Because, Craig, it's not really that popular, in case you don't know.
I actually moved to Arizona where I could play a little bit more regularly and go to the off track. But I found that I was really streaky in my handicapping. And, you know, I'd go through periods where I was hitting everything and months where I wasn't hitting anything. And the only thing I could attribute that to was probably, you know, that bias, unconscious bias for anything that I'm weighing a little bit more heavily from day to day. And I thought the only way to take that variability out is to let the computer do it for me, right? And to start testing those variables. And I thought, well, you know, if I can test these variables, that would be great. Somebody told me that if I was serious about my handicapping, I needed to have a database to go back and do that testing. Thank you, Derek. And so now I've got that database to go waste all my time playing around in. But it is a lot of fun. It can be discouraging. Takes quite a bit of time at times to keep your data clean. But it definitely gives you the advantage that you can go back and test your ideas and theories and not have to spend a ton of money watching them come in or not come in down the road, right?
Well, you said something too that I think is key, and you talked about it even when you talked about going to grad school and about, you know, trying to diet and how it can affect your cognitive abilities. Let's be honest, there's so many things in life that can do that. You're too tired. We were joking before the show. I sent you a cranky email when you were just trying to help me out. These things happen, and they certainly, I think you'd be naive to think that this doesn't have an effect in terms of how you look at the races. And so that has always been one of the huge appeals to me with database handicapping. And then two, at a certain point, I don't think we can say this now, but at a certain point, the time that you spend should go down just because now you've got stuff that works and now it's just a matter of applying that. Let's talk specifically about your horizontal wagers, because honestly, Craig, I'm not just, you know, blowing smoke here, but you seem to be one of the most consistent horizontal players that I've ever seen. I mean, you've had multiple scores, pick five. I don't know how many pick sixes you've had, but you've just done very, very well. How did that come about, and how is that different from just playing to win, to place, to show?
Well, you know, where I really kind of turned the corner was when I read Steve Tripp's book on exotic wagering and looked at the ABC method, and I was kind of already doing a little bit of that with some tickets at Mountaineer. I didn't know that I was doing the ABC method, but I pretty much was. The main difference with my ABC method on my 5s and 6s is I play a ticket with all of my A's and B's on it. You know, in his method, it's one, or you have to have two A's, or two B's win and four A's if you have any B's come in. It allows me to be a little more selective on my A's, maybe a little less selective on my B's, and then my C's are really that more suggest. I can't quite convince myself to talk, or I've got a favorite that I think is a pretty easy single, but you know, what I found is if I do single that leg, those are the ones I miss. My second ranked horse wins. And boy, I like to have a C ticket going, so I've got at least some entertainment value for the rest of the sequence, if not lucky enough to hit it. One of the biggest things is when I look at my pick four and pick three structures, though, is getting paid more when you're right. So on my pick fives and pick sixes, I'm really looking for kind of that coverage maximization, right? So, you want to be deeper in a leg here or there to get that long shot in where it's going to pay. However, on the pick fours and pick threes, it's a little less expensive, a little fewer races in the sequence. I want to get paid more if my A's come in, right? If it's AAAA, I will bet four times the minimum. Usually I, you know, based on the minimum. So I'll have four units on those combinations. And really what drove it was a conversation with Tommy Mathis last year on Facebook where he said, you know, you don't like each horse the same. Why would you play it for the same amount?
Yep.
That was kind of what drove me to try to figure out these combinations and what I want to go do. I've had further conversations with him, and he's not completely on board with my method. And he likes to find that long shot to single and then play more around it, where mine's really kind of looking at still getting some coverage and having two or three horses. You know, if I have a C win and the rest of them are A, I'm still going to cash twice. If I have two C's win in a pick four sequence, I'm only going to cash once if I luck into getting to two A's in the other two legs. I do require me to get two A's correct in a pick four to cash. My view is if I'm not smart enough to get at least two A's in, I probably don't deserve to cash that ticket, and it's going to be cost prohibitive to have coverage on everything. So I require two A's on the first sequence, and then I'll have coverage if an A, B, or C wins the other two legs.
Now, I got to tell you, I just talked to Jonathan Stetton, who was a longtime professional player. I've talked to Tommy Mathis, and they both make the point, which you just made here, and I've tried to make it for years. This is a decision game. You've got to make decisions at some point. There are too many people that talk about hedging or, you know, we're going to, you know, play for maximum coverage. Like, that's fine. But at some point, somewhere in a sequence, at the races, in a month, in a week, in a year, you got to make decisions. And so I really like that approach. Let's talk a little bit about how you determine whether to bet a pick four, a pick three, especially. In fact, let's look at the different kinds of wagers, but do you need a certain, let's say you've got, you know, all your A horses. Do you need a certain A horse to be a good price? What are you looking for in terms of the morning line odds? Are you looking at the morning line odds when you determine whether to bet the pick three or pick four or pick five?
Absolutely. On pick threes, I look for an A that's 6-1 or better, a B or C that's 10-1 or better, or having two B's or C's that are 6-1 or better. I've got it automated to where if that's the case, as I handicap my A's, B's, and C's, if those fall out, it will automatically tell me I should play the pick three. And it will look for coming in, the pick three coming into that race and going out of that race, right? So you've got three potential pick three sequences. And then I just kind of look at the affordability. I'm not going to go and spend, you know, $70-$80 on a pick three sequence. I'll spend $20-$30 on a pick three sequence. And if that comes up and it's affordable and my system tells me I've got an A that's 6-1 or better, or one, especially if I get a B or C that's 10-1 or better, and I go back and look at that horse and I can see why I like it. You know, I've got a primary point system that I've set up in my spreadsheet that will give me my A's, B's, and C's. It proposes them. And then I've got a couple of alternative methods where I look at their acceleration scores and how they shape up in my rate shape score. And if I can see that they're still pretty solid, I'm getting 6-10-1 or maybe even better, I'm going to pull the trigger and probably bet whatever I can with that rate in the sequence. And I may hedge and use the other horses that I have as A's, B's, and C's in that race, but quite frequently I won't, and I'll just use that horse that's causing that race to come out on the spreadsheet as a playable sequence.
Yeah, what I like too, you sent me some results. Again, I've seen a lot of your results. So this to me is kind of typical. I don't think this is in any way, you know, a outlier in terms of examples. But you got two bets here. You got a pick four, at Los Alamitos starting in the first race and the fifth race. $66 for one, $65 for another. So that's the other thing I love about it. You're not going crazy, and you've got a lot of different combinations here because, of course, you're betting differently based, obviously, on how you feel about these combinations. One of the questions I get all the time from players, and I think it's kind of a tough question to answer, which is why I'm letting you answer it instead of answering it myself. Let's talk about the most important factors in racing. Let's go to the top three. What do you think are the top three most important factors in handicapping a horse race?
Well, I think the top one's pace, right? Obviously, you'll hear the pace makes a race. You're looking for lone speed or a very contentious pace where you've got a horse that's got a late pace advantage as well. I think that's number one, is to figure out the pace. I think number two, in my view, is really class, and it's drop. I mean, it's a combination of, I look at their class score, you know, how much money have they made, what types of fields have they been running with, what purses. I look more at purses than the condition of the race when I'm looking at the class score.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I also think that the drop in a class is I kind of bucket those as number two. Is really, you know, going up, you'll hear the axiom when you hang out, you know, around the racetrack at all, that the best hop, you know, obviously it's leaning on the negative side of the game, but they'll say the best hop's a drop, right? So dropping your horse is way better than any drug that some underhanded trainer might be giving them. You're definitely going to have an advantage. You know, I think you talked about, trainer up north at that down here at Turf Paradise, Mike Chambers, and really he'll come out and he'll tell you that he wins a lot of races because he's running $20,000 horses for $5,000. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's an advantage. Dropping them in where they can be competitive, you know, David Jacobson at Aqueduct, he had a lot of success doing that. Claiming horses for $25, dropping them in for $16. They're going to have an advantage because they're better horses. You just got to be paying attention and trying to understand and see the trainer patterns on whether or not they do that regularly and still races, or if you want to avoid that horse because there's a problem. You know, there's one of two reasons the horse is dropping. And I think the third thing that I really look at is connections and equipment changes. And not the way in which many people will look and say, this horse is adding blinkers. That's a big deal. I want to see him coming off. You know, I want to see blinkers off. Blinkers off when in my testing is consistently profitable all across the board. Blinkers on, not. But it's one thing where until I did my testing, boy, I was blind to that completely. I figured blinkers on was a big deal and blinkers off probably wasn't. And man, it is completely different when you actually look at the data behind that.
Yeah, I remember when you and I talked about that. On the subject of dropping in class too, I should point this out for those who are listening. Craig raises a great point there. If you look at all the prolific trainers these days, almost all of them are good at this. In fact, there was a column a while back about Bernadetti. This was a horse that unfortunately passed away at Los Alamitos. It was trained by Doug O'Neill, and Doug O'Neill got a lot of flack from taking this horse. I believe it was from Del Mar. It was definitely in Southern California, to Los Alamitos, ran it for a tag, and of course, Bernadetti breaks down. It looked like a suspicious drop in the first place, but I pointed out the fact that Doug O'Neill had done that in the past, and he'd done it successfully in the past. And you will see this with a lot of trainers. And frankly, Los Alamitos is that kind of a racetrack anyway. It's a lower class racetrack. You're going to get that kind of thing. Not to say that horses should be injured or trainers should be running injured horses, but the class drop is a big, big reason why you have trainers today winning 20 to 25% of the time, whereas some of the greats in the past were, you know, 16%, 17%, so forth and so on. All right, Craig, we've reached the point in the program where it's time for a random question.
That's so random.
You want answers?
What'd you say? Right. Funny how?
Hey, come on. We're superheroes. What could happen?
What would you say you do here?
You'll know the unit, are you?
You all know about death.
Do you have any marijuana I might be able to buy from you?
Is it true that you're in the middle of a nervous breakdown?
Who said that?
Why do you say you feel trapped in a man's body?
All right. I don't know. There's something, that one clip about what do you know about death? I just cracks me up every time I hear it. Anyway, your random question. We got actually a couple of these. Just, you know, quick 30-second answers, whatever. What would you rather do, go into the past or the future?
Past. Go back to the past. I mean, you can always see where you may have made bad decisions and make some choices that would be different. And take some wisdom that you have today back. Plus, you know, just like this, like take my almanac with me. That would make this handicapping thing a lot easier.
Absolutely. All right. What would you rather be? Really hairy or completely bald?
Yeah, probably completely bald. Yeah, hair, I don't know. Hair kind of grosses me out. I'm starting to get bald anyway, so.
I'm kind of with you. I'm kind of torn on that one. All right, and last but not least, what was your favorite childhood video games? Did they have video games when you were a kid, Craig? Kidding.
Oh, yeah.
Kidding.
Oh, yeah. well, man, that's a tough one. Favorite. I played a lot of video games. I grew up with the Atari. I created a Commodore 64 horse racing game when I was 14. It's kind of cool.
Wait, yeah? I gotta interject there. So did I. I had a Commodore 64. I had a horse racing game. I made a football game. And the funny thing is, some of these games would have been, they could have been commercial games at the time. And I look at them now and it's like, oh my God. It's a joke when you compare it to Madden and some of the graphics that they have in these other games. But anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in there. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. You had a little legs going back and forth on the horses. That was about all you could do with these little basic programming, go-to, go-sub, these things. But when I look at video games we played, you know, I liked Decathlon. It was pretty cool. I liked when you had the 10 different...
Right.
I won a remote controlled joystick by getting high score on Decathlon. So that was kind of cool. So I probably spent more time playing Space Invaders and Asteroids than anything else.
Very nice. It's interesting, you know, that you have that background, because I've talked to a lot of people that have that kind of statistical bent, and a lot of them, you know, either played those kinds of video games. I was big into the Stratomatic games, the sports games, all the simulation type stuff. So, anyway, Craig, it's been a pleasure chatting with you. How can folks get a hold of you to get some of your insights?
Well, just on Facebook, just Craig Spencer. It's fun. That's me. I'm probably Facebook's easiest way to hold me.
All right. Well, you know, maybe if you just throw it out there on Facebook, you'll get all the kind of crazy friends that I get that want to, you know, sell me sunglasses and jerseys and post porn videos and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there might be a couple of those I want to filter out in some of your friends, but yeah.
All right, Craig. It's been great chatting with you. I hope you come back.
For sure. Thanks.
Now, here's why you can win.
Every time you lose, you die a little bit. You die inside a portion of you. Not all of your organs, maybe just your liver.
In our business, there is no second place. Either you're first or you're last.
Sick. Saucy. I mean, you walk in that door on your two legs, all fat and cocky.
You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward.
See that? That's your IQ, buddy. Zero.
If you look at this play, what we're trying to get is a seal here and a seal here and try to run this play in the alley.
Remember, we do everything in reps. There's not two reps of water drinking. Usually we do 10 reps of everything, so do another rep of water drinking.
I am joined this morning, as I am every week, by Kevin Rogers. I almost said Kenny Rogers, Kevin, because for whatever reason, I kept thinking of Kenny Rogers, which is probably some kind of a problem I need to have addressed. But good morning. How you doing?
Good. Is it the musician, or is it the restaurant chain you were thinking of?
Or the pitcher, actually. I think Kenny Rogers, didn't he throw a perfect game?
Yes, he did. He did throw a perfect game, and he threw down a camera, stole it from a cameraman, too. So he's done a lot.
All right. Hey, Kevin, before we talk about the games that you want to talk about today, I did want to discuss briefly with you losing streaks. You know, this is a big deal in horse racing, and obviously it's a lot more pronounced in horse racing. Just to give some stats to some folks, favorites win about 35% of the time in horse racing. So your chance of a three-race losing streak, 27%. By contrast, in sports betting, because you just have the two teams, it's about 12.5. So it's definitely not the issue in sports betting that it is in horse racing, but it can still get to a player's psyche. How do you go about dealing with losing streaks in sports gambling?
You know, it's a really hard thing because your confidence is so huge in what you do that, you know, there are times if, let's just say I go on a nice winning streak or winning stretch, really, you know, like right now in college, for instance, I've won 7 of 8. Okay, so I've done well. But, and I've said to you before, that what you did yesterday, you know, that's great, but it really means nothing if you did well yesterday and you had a bad day today. And, you know, the ups and downs are one of the hardest things to accept. Like for now, you know, I say to myself, what am I doing right? Am I seeing something right? As opposed to the flip side, when I've gone on 2-7 streaks or even worse than that, I say, what am I doing wrong? Am I not focusing? And sometimes I feel like you're doing the right thing, but things just aren't working out. And it's not even about bad luck or a bad bounce. Sometimes you just lose the game convincingly and you say, you know what, though? When I look back at it, I think the key is, Derek, is, you know, you say, did I handicap this game the right way? I did it. This is the way I felt good about it. And just the game didn't turn out the way that I wanted it to, then you take a little bit of solace in that. If you, you know, there are times where after you handicap a game and you lose, you say, you know what, that was a bad pick. And you can do that. You can't say on every losing pick I should have taken the other team. That's, you can't go about it that way because then you're second-guessing yourself all the time. But, you know, and on the flip side, you can't say when you win, oh, I'm such a genius because I took this game and they won and they covered. So I think it's just about trying to stay somewhat on the same level going through it and sticking to what you do well, whether it's handicapping with trends or, you know, different kinds of statistics or whatever the case, or line movement, whatever the case may be. As long as you do it, you're going to go up and down. But just, you know, people have said to me before when you're on a losing streak, oh, go opposite of what you would have done. I say I'm never doing that. Because once I start to do that, then I'm really second-guessing myself. Because if I would have taken, I'm just giving you an example, if I would have taken USC instead of Arizona and I go the other way and it loses, I said, well, I knew I should have taken USC. I knew that. And yet I'm playing these games with my head. So you almost have to just be very mentally strong with it and say, okay, I'm on a losing streak. I'm doing things the right way. It'll turn around and just hope that's the case.
You make the point that you can't let the streak get to you. And we've talked about this before. I think whether it's a winning streak or a losing streak, the minute you start second guessing, you know, whether it's, and that's why, frankly, I'm suspicious of people who, you know, get all crazy about a win too. There's that old saying, I think it's from Tom Landry, about scoring a touchdown, act like you've been there before. That kind of excessive celebration or the excessive, you know, feeling of just utter despair when you lose, I don't think is healthy long term. There was a phrase in a book that I read from Andrew Beyer. He talked about losing streaks, and he mentioned looking for that fastball down the middle, the gimme game, if you will. Do you think that's effective, or is it really just, hey, stick to what you've been doing, and eventually things will turn around?
I think you got to stick to what you do. And, also, stick to what you do and learn. If you learn from the losses, there's nothing wrong with that. That I think that, you know, you want to keep chasing or keep going, but, you know, it's like anything else. If you lose, why did I lose? Simple as that. And you see, and if you follow the game and you watched it, and let's just say, you know, for instance, that somebody hit a shot at the end and you didn't cover. You were laying points, somebody hits a meaningless shot at the end and you didn't cover. You were on the right side. You did things well. It didn't work out. It's okay, you know. But if it's on the flip side where you get blown out and or you take a favorite that was, it seemed like a public favorite and they lost it, okay, maybe there's a reason why this team wasn't favored by a lot of points. And that's what I tried to do. And that's the best thing about this day in and day out is you can learn from it and kind of pick up something and say, okay, for next time, you know, I'll give you kind of like an example of it there. It's almost like in the movie Groundhog Day with Bill Murray, when every single time he goes through the day and he goes through one of the parts of the day, he'll say something and something will happen a different way, or he'll almost like blink and be like, okay, now I know. So the next time he goes in there, then he does things better. And that's almost kind of what you got to do, is to say, all right, what went wrong? Okay, this went wrong. I need to fix this next time. Sometimes there's nothing to fix. Sometimes you just get screwed. Sometimes that happens. But also with a win, you do the same thing. What did I do right here? Oh, okay. All right, stick with this. This is a good idea. Or if you win, sometimes you could say, you know what, I got lucky. It's okay to get lucky. You don't have to be a genius every time you win and be an idiot every time you lose. That's right. Kind of the way I look at it.
I totally agree with that. I hear that so often, you know, and there are times people are right for the wrong reasons. And I think that's kind of what we're talking about here, that introspection, deciding, hey, what did I do right? What did I do wrong? If what you did wrong involved shots and three cases of beer, though, I would also say that you've got another problem that you need to address. And I say that half in jest, because there are a lot of people who think that gambling and drinking go together, and they do not. All right. Let's talk a little bit about some games you got on the docket this week, Kevin.
Well, we'll take a look at some of the Thursday action, and in the Pac-12, we're going to take a look at a few games. One of them is the Arizona Wildcats. They're hosting California tonight in Tucson, and Arizona's been a bit uneven in Pac-12 play. That they have lost a couple times on the road, coming off a few defeats to Colorado and Utah. Utah's definitely going to the tournament. Colorado's probably getting in. So, no, those aren't shameful losses at all. And we know Arizona is excellent at home. Since they lost to Oregon, who probably won the Pac-12 regular season title, Arizona's played much better at home of late. They didn't get a couple covers against some of the L.A. teams, but we know that Arizona's a different team when they play at home. I look at Cal, and Cal, I believe, finished undefeated at home this year overall. And they've been on a great run in the Pac-12. However, I think a lot of that is them cleaning up at home of late and beating some of the teams on the road that really, you know, aren't the upper tier teams in the conference. And Arizona lost to Cal earlier this year in Berkeley. I just think that Arizona will come back tonight as a favorite. As the Bay Area teams go to Arizona this weekend, and Arizona State's been a disaster. Like we know that. They were down like 30-2 to Utah last week, got blown out, and they're coming off a couple bad road losses to pretty good teams. But they return home tonight. They're a short favorite against Stanford, and Stanford's coming off a couple really nice wins at home against UCLA and USC. But Stanford has been terrible as a road underdog in the Pac-12 since the end of last year. They're just 1-8 against the spread as a road dog against their conference foes. So, you know, they're really not a road team to be trusted. They have two road wins this year in the conference against Washington State, who's in last place, and against Oregon State, who's a horrible road team. So I think that for Arizona State, there's a good chance for them to win, since they get Cal coming up this weekend, a tournament team that they're going to face. So I think this is the one game I think Arizona State can grab. They're laying a few points, so I'll take them.
Very good. And anything else?
No, looking forward to the conference tournaments next week, and we're getting close to Selection Sunday, so it's going to be very busy, and it's a really fun time of year.
All right. Well, it's always a pleasure, Kevin. Thanks so much, and we'll talk again next week.
All right, Derek. Thank you.